Outcasters, it's your ABTV Outcast After Show. This week we are talking about Season 1, Episode 5, The Road Before Us. Stick with us to find out whether this panel gets away with the 12-pound ham from the Piggly Wiggly, or will we lose ourselves to the streets? Stay tuned to find out right here on ABTV.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin!
Yep.
I feel like spiritual with it.
I feel like the deeper into this show we get, the more I want R&B to be, because I'm feeling so many things.
Yeah.
I feel like I need Boyz II Men to just gently cradle me after each episode. So, hi everybody who's watching us. Welcome back. This is our wonderful panel. I'm here too. I'm Lex Michael. I'm all over social media at the Lex Michael. And with me are...
I'm Lucretia Lyon, and you guys can always find me at LACRETIALYON, since there is only one.
Hi guys, I'm Joel Monique, and you can find me everywhere at Joel Monique.
Hello everyone, I'm Abby Vega, and you can find me at _ Abby Vega.
So, guys, this is episode 5, which means, if I'm not mistaken, we are halfway through this season.
Only half.
And, but we're getting so much new information, and I felt personally, just a pure information angle, this was a very, very big episode. But I wanted to ask you guys, since it is a lot more of an info dump than we've gotten, I think, in any 1 hour so far, I wanted to know how you guys felt about it. Do you think that they did a good job balancing a ton of exposition with a feeling of momentum? What did you guys think about this hour overall?
I liked this. It kind of took a break from me. There's the last couple episodes I've been stressed kind of watching, like, this music. I'm like, who's gonna die? Something bad's gonna happen kind of thing.
Right.
And so this one, I kind of took a breath. It was a lot of information that we needed. But like I said, I was a little more relaxed watching this one. So overall, I really liked this episode.
Yeah, I thought they did a really nice job. We got a lot of kind of moving relationships forward, which I liked a lot, particularly Reverend and Kyle's, which is so on shaky ground right now. And kind of seeing them go back and forth at it and try to keep themselves together and up has been really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of my favorite parts of the show is the relationship between Kyle and Reverend Anderson, because I'm big into buddy cop stuff. But yeah, they really ramped that up in this episode of them being a team, and I really like that. That's why you see, you know, in the previews that may change, but that, yeah.
I mean, they're already hinting pretty hard at it. Yeah.
I missed the previews. Yeah.
I didn't see the preview,
so I don't know what you're talking about.
I did not see the promo, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Spoiler.
No.
Yeah. You're just cool with it.
But like, so, I'm with you guys totally, and what I thought was really interesting about this episode specifically is that we've got a couple of characters, Anderson being a perfect example, so yeah, we should start there, but we've got a lot of characters that are dealing with new information that is clashing aggressively with the view of the world that they have essentially chosen for themselves. And we see after last week, there's this big question of, well, how many of these exorcisms have actually been effective. We know
none of them.
Yeah, we know it didn't work on Mildred.
None of them. No.
So seeing them now have to go through the motions of going back and finding some of these people that have been exorcised, or Anderson thought he exorcised, was, I thought, a great opportunity not only to have Kyle's worldview and Anderson's worldview bump up against each other, but also just to continually put Anderson in a position of questioning, what have I been doing? Do I know anything? You know, what is all of this been for? Has it been for nothing? And if it's been for nothing, what am I doing here?
Yeah. Are you there, God? It's me, Reverend Anderson. I need help.
and to be, you know, you make that joke specifically, but they actually make that text essentially by the end of the episode, where Kyle literally says, you know, if your God is out there, he's laughing at you. Mm-hmm. He's not listening, he's laughing. But okay, so we see them going around, making the rounds around town, around this town of Rome, which, oh, I have a question.
Tell us.
So, and this is not unique to this show. This tends to be true of a lot of shows where all of the action is set in a town that we're told is a small town. Mm. but the more time we spend, the bigger and bigger the small town seems to be.
Okay, yeah. Like, here, I have a philosophy on that. I grew up in a small town. We had 20,000 people, which doesn't seem small, but it's a lot of people. But you could still, like, everyone knew certain key figures, and everybody had very strong opinions, and you can tell people by, like, last names. So I feel like that's kind of what we're dealing with in Rome, which I think is significantly smaller than that. I want to say Rome is only, like, maybe 5,000. It's a really, really small town. So I think it works. I think that, you know, there are, like, 5,000 people is a lot. You got a lot of room to play in there.
Sure. Well, because I just was noticing, because it seems like, specifically in this episode, it seems like they cover a lot of physical ground. But it doesn't ever seem like they're too far outside of home base. And it's like, I'm reminded of, I keep thinking of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, too. We're like, for 7 years, we're told over and over, Sunnydale is a very small place, but it seems to have, like, 3 cemeteries, and 2 international airports, and it's 2 college campuses. So yeah. I got that sensation a couple of times this episode when they were making their rounds. But the first significant stop that they make, and this continues to be maybe the most significant over the course of this episode, is they go to look for this girl named Sherry. And they talk to her dad, and her dad says, well, haven't seen her. She went to Charlotte, and so we can't verify face-to-face that there's no demon in this person. But then the picture worsens, because not only is she living in Charlotte, but she's been living on the streets, as it would seem, which is just no good. Living on the streets. I am anti. If I could avoid it myself, I am not for living on the streets. So he hasn't seen or heard from his daughter in months. So obviously we don't have anything conclusive, which is almost more frustrating, I think, than finding her still possessed is not finding her at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But of course, in the absence of any and all conclusive answers, Anderson is, of course, befuddled. Flustered.
I mean, Anderson really wants to believe, like, the thing that has been propping him up is that, like, I've helped people. Like, I've done good things. Like, I had to leave my family behind. But at least in this moment, I was able to help those really in need. And I did it through my faith. And he feels, I think, really empowered by that. And then for Kyle, who is not sensitive to this at all, and just kind of, like, sneering when he's like, see, I told you, these people are obviously still possessed. Yeah. Why didn't you believe me? But it's a complete crumbling of his entire foundation for Reverend Anderson. So I feel bad. He's kind of getting really dragged through the mud this episode.
Yeah, oh, I was saying it was a rough episode for him, because Kyle, and I think obviously Reverend Anderson in his soul, like, knows, okay, this is not looking too good, but he's still just trying to hold on to a little bit of hope that it wasn't all for nothing and that he didn't completely screw this up.
Sure.
But Kyle, like you said, is not sensitive at all to the fact. He's like, no, these people are all still possessed, and it's pretty sad for Reverend Anderson this episode.
Yeah, Kyle's a bit of a negative Nancy in this.
Yeah, he needs to be. Someone needs to, like, exactly.
To be fair, as we've covered extensively on this show so far this season, Kyle's life is terrible.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
we get why. Absolutely terrible.
Everyone's lives terrible.
Yeah, no one's life is good.
Nope.
Yeah.
Like, this week, more than any other week, I feel comfortable asserting no one's life is good.
Yes, because Reverend Anderson's life is just crumbling. I mean, yeah, as you say, he gave up so much for this, and then to find out that it was literally all for nothing that he's found so far. And that's why, you know, he's a little overly sensitive with Kyle, and, like, you know, what am I supposed to say? Hey, you know, that demon I exercise might not be out of you, just knocking on the door.
Yeah, exactly.
I
love that.
It's like, whoops, I may have left a demon there. Well, sorry.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say that you also see a lot of Anderson's vanity in this episode, like, when he's like, why him? Like, what does he have? And I think it's kind of strange. You never think of, like, you know, religious folk as being kind of vain, but he really, really wants to have the power to do these things.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's his pride that's gotten in his way, I think.
And what's also interesting, too, is because we keep saying that clearly Reverend Anderson failed at these exorcisms, but at the same time, he did something, because why else would all these people think that their significant others are, you know what I mean? So he got some sort of demon out, just not the entirety of it. Is that what is happening?
I don't know.
You know what I mean? Because, like, it's for me, right. I have to believe that he must have done something because people obviously thought that these people were healed.
Right.
So they had to be acting differently, and it must not have been as extreme anymore. Right. So I'm kind of curious what exactly he was doing because something was happening.
Obviously, or at least they faked it for quite some time. Yeah. But it looked at, because I think Mildred is a great character. Yes. She's so entertaining. Amazing. But yeah, and it's just like, you know, the person she is now is obviously, according to her daughter, not who she was. Mm-hmm. So it's like, obviously there's always been something wrong, as we see with Allison as well. So no one just noticed.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, they're not going crazy.
We'll assume they're okay.
And that may be the thing, is the demons inside these people are like, wait, if we get too crazy, they're gonna beat us. They're gonna punch us in the face.
Right.
But just chill out a little bit.
Well, and we got that little tidbit of, like, I won't survive the
merging.
Yeah.
I want to circle back around to that, because we got to talk about that. We got some interesting Sydney business in this episode that I definitely want to circle back around to, but I want to, for a little bit, stay on Anderson and Kyle, because I'm listening to everything that you guys are saying, and I'm agreeing wholeheartedly. What I really like, and I appreciate about this show, is that they're doling out character information without laboring it, without hitting the nail on the head too aggressively. This idea of the work that Anderson does about what his faith means to him and about the good things that he's doing with his faith, it seems to me like, in the absence of his family, for example, who he lost, I mean, he doesn't have much of a life at this point. He chose this path instead, and I feel like, on the surface, you could argue that, yes, that makes his life just as awful as anybody else's on this show. Yeah. But what he definitely has that a lot of these other characters don't is this inner centeredness, is maybe not the right word, but something anchoring him inside. And that is this faith of his. And that has become so, I think, synonymous with how he views himself. So once that starts to crumble, I feel like it's very easy for him to start losing his sense of reality or self along with it, which I think is why it's so great to watch him butting up against that notion so aggressively. And of course, then they make their next stop, and when Kyle puts his hands on Brian?
Yeah.
This poor man who now lives in the pet store?
Yeah.
We get pretty compelling evidence suggesting that the demons are not gone.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was don't touch him. I'm like, what's going to happen? Yes.
He did not seem well.
No.
And granted, he didn't. If he wasn't possessed, he wouldn't be doing particularly well.
Yeah.
He apparently has given up running the pet store entirely because he doesn't like people. And his wife got the house, so he now lives in the defunct pet store. Dude doesn't need a demon to be doing little
poorly. But is that why? Is it the demon that made him kind of make those decisions?
That one was a little more hazy. He was like, I don't like being touched. And there was a lot more tension as opposed to, like, fighting to get off. So I don't know if Kyle just had, like, a really good hold on him and he wasn't able to get up. But usually the demons seem to put up a way more aggressive, like, throwing you across the room kind of fight. And then there was that moment with the shotgun toward the end of the scene. I was really surprised that we didn't hear a second shot after, or a single shot after they left the pet store. I thought that he looked close to suicide.
Sure. Yeah, that was what I was expecting as well. Is just for himself,
Well, I didn't expect that either, only because I get a sense from some of the interactions, because every interaction that these entities possessing these people have with anyone, it's all super cryptic, and you have to decipher quite a bit of what it means. But the general vibe I get is that, if nothing else, they're at least somewhat interested in self-preservation or in preserving their host, which is why, I never figured it would go that way. I figured he would just go back inside and sit in a chair and just be sad in the dark for a long time.
We do get a sense of people kind of fighting these demons a little bit. I mean, if Kyle's wife... If Allison is possessed, is she fighting it? Is she possessed? There seems to be some kind of...
Yes.
Tinkering back and forth, and I got that sense from the pet shop owner as well.
Yeah, and there's a lot that we can unpack with Allison in this episode as well. She's who I want to circle around to after we finish the thread that we're on.
Copy.
Because there's a bunch.
We got
more Allison stuff this hour, I think, than all of the previous episodes.
Yeah, absolutely. I liked it, yeah. We got a lot of Allison.
But well, so, Well, I'm sorry, what?
Oh, I was just going to say that what they kind of notice with Allison as well as the pet store owner is them self-medicating. You notice that he was a big drinker and, like, she is obviously, you know, on some pills, whether they be prescription or not, is that, and they were like, are they trying to, I'm trying to remember the term they actually use. I think they said, like, mask the pain or whatever of this, you know, demon that is obviously inside of these people. So that was really interesting to see. Because I know some other shows on TV right now are people, once they get possessed, don't drink anymore, don't do anything. But then this is going to be the opposite. So, yeah, I mean, it must be them trying to combat the demons.
I definitely get that feel.
Yeah. Well, I also feel like if you're a, and I don't know exactly how demonic possession works, and I certainly, I certainly don't know. I don't know what exactly yet makes these entities different than other possessing demonic entities we've seen in fiction. I would imagine if you're driving a body, it's a little like driving a car. If you get the body, the metaphor falls apart a little bit. But if you get the car drunk. Right? Then the driving is harder. It's not a perfect metaphor. But you get what I mean, right? Yeah. But, so I feel like I, if I'm possessing a body, would want to keep the vessel as clean as possible. I wouldn't want to have a cirrhosis of the liver situation happening, for example.
Unless it's a struggle to keep a hold of the body. It doesn't seem like they have clear possession. You know what I mean? Like, it seems like 85, you know,
83%
for people, like, it kind of goes back and forth, and so sometimes you get the feeling like, oh, this person seems more controlled, and I will circle around to Allison, but I see that a lot in her character.
Exactly, yeah, because obviously in the first episode, Joshua fully possessed at that point, but it's with all these people that Reverend Anderson kind of touched, it seems like they do have some type of control. It's not a full possession.
Sure, and it does make sense a little bit that if you have most of the host under your sway, you would probably want to suppress that, say, 15% that still has their own agency, and you could probably do that with prescription medication or alcohol or something that actually tracks really well. That's smart. you'd be a good possessing demonic entity.
Yeah.
Can you look into, do they have like an online university for that type of thing?
I would sign up right away. Yeah. A lot of people cross off my list.
So we have this interaction with Brian, and after this interaction, it seems like Anderson, though he's certainly not happy about it, is starting to be swayed. He's starting to lean towards having to face this idea that, yeah, maybe my work was not as effective as I would have hoped or as I previously thought. So he first goes off. They split at this point, and at first I went, wait, where's Anderson going? And then we just, we leave him for a while. But he comes, apparently he has these adventures where he goes sleuthing, he goes sleuthing by himself. He, like, goes, he checks out his leads, his, like, confidential informants that this priest has. And he gets a lead on this missing girl, Sherry. And so he and Kyle go to find her. And they wander through what I guess is Rome's version of Skid Row for a little while.
But she's not in Rome.
She was just Charlotte,
yeah.
I believe.
Yeah.
So they actually went, they do. See, this is why. Taking steps back, this is why it feels bigger. It's because they do leave.
Yeah, they do leave.
That's why. So they wander through this Skid Row-ish area until they eventually track her down. And they track her down in this really creepy warehouse. And of course, as soon as Kyle touches her, same thing happens. She starts reacting very violently. And Anderson goes into full resurrection mode.
He totally did. I was like, Anderson.
It's like, you gotta give him credit, right? For persistence. He wants to keep trying. It's like, dude, this didn't.
I know, when he started doing that, I was like, does he really think that this is gonna help?
Well, and I feel like even his performance was a little hollow and like, last ditch efforts. This is all I know to do.
Yeah.
Something happened, maybe? It didn't feel like he was fully committed to it. He gave in pretty quickly.
Well, I agree with you. I agree that that part felt a little bit like Anderson, the character, wasn't fully invested in it.
Yeah.
It's certainly not the actor at all.
No, he's great.
The character didn't feel fully invested. I did, and maybe this was just me projecting onto it, I thought the difference between his level of investment when he was doing the prayer and the exorcism versus his level of investment when he finally was just like, go on, Kyle, hit her!
Yeah, I know, I love that. I know. Like, that was so funny. He's like, do it! Do it!
Do it.
I was really glad that Kyle cannot resist hitting people. Yeah.
I know.
To exercise like, them.
He just got to punch him in the face, apparently.
Yeah.
He can't take any more of that.
But, like, that was the moment for me as I'm watching this program where this guy is just being encouraged to punch a possessed woman by a priest. I was like, this is the best show of the season. Maybe ever. Yeah. This might be the best program that there is. But so we get a lot of, like I was saying, this really cryptic talk from this entity inside of Sherry. And she says, and I had to specifically write it down, she says, "You're the key. We need your light. The nameless, the numberless. We see you through the veil. We come to you and you lead us here." And so my first question is, what?
Yeah, I know. I couldn't, and I'm glad you wrote that down because I was kind of struggling to hear what she was exactly saying. I like re-listened and I'm like, okay, I'm not even going to attempt again, but what was my reaction to? Like, what does that mean?
You know? I mean, if we stop to think about how everything kind of follows Kyle, that seems to be the thing. It explains like why the women closest to him seem to always be in precarious situations. You are like a lighthouse, Kyle.
Sure.
You're a lighthouse, and they just see you from the other side, and they're like, oh, that way!
Okay.
We gotta invade the bodies. At least that's kind of how I kind of took it, is that there's something about him that attracts evil beings from hell? The netherworld? I don't know.
From wherever they're coming from, yeah.
He's a beacon of darkness. It's like, all right, we'll just head to that guy. I know even in the chat that Childhood's Hour said, yeah, Kyle's power must not be a good one to have. He's had to be an outcast in order to have it. And, I mean, basically these demons and evil entities are seeing him as king.
Yeah. You
know, so what's that about?
If I had to guess, I would say maybe it has something to do with this merging that we hear with the two ones. We'll get to that, though. The chick starts floating.
Yes, and Kyle was up there, too.
Sherry starts levitating.
To her head.
And then, of course, we get a reappearance of the giant, my favorite character on the show, the giant CGI black goo monster.
Yeah. Flubber's cousin.
Good to see this gobbly goo monster working again.
Yeah, after lost, it was a long, long period before I had another job.
So it grapples with Kyle for a little while before apparently relenting going back to wherever weird CG black demon goo monsters go. When they're done for the day, packed it in, went to get a sandwich. And then it's over, and they return Sherry to her father. We last see her in a hospital where she is apparently in a catatonic state.
Like his mother. Yeah. I know. That's what is one thing that I don't understand. What makes one person have the different reactions? You know what I mean? Because we were talking about that before. Because it seemed like the kids are fine after, but then you see his mom in that state, and then now this teenager is in that state too. Are you soon, like, young adult, whatever? And I'm just so curious if we're gonna figure out what makes certain people have these certain reactions.
At this point, it feels like duration of time you were possessed. Like, we got the kid when he was like just starting to eat his own fingers. He was cute and still controllable, and then, you know, they were able to exercise him. But a lot of the others, especially Mildred, seems very tight with her inner ghoul thing. I feel like there would be a lot of exercising in order to get that thing out of her.
Sure.
So I think that after a while, your body just can't fight anymore. That's the vibe I get.
Yeah. Well, I would think, too, is it possible that, say, some of these entities are a little bit like an illness where they will affect the very old or the very young more strongly? That falls apart slightly because Joshua seems to be the only successful exorcism that we have seen so far until this one.
Successful. Kind of makes me wonder if it wasn't, because that's the thing, is he's the only one, and it doesn't make sense. I mean, because you see Kyle's mother and then Sherry are both in catatonic states because obviously it did leave them. But yeah, with Joshua, that makes me think that he's not
all. Yeah, they got to go back to Joshua?
Yeah.
Because if they don't, if they don't ultimately succeed at all in some capacity, on top of all of the other thematic and story beats going on in the show, then it also does become a show about a priest and his little buddy wandering around beating up parishioners. Which, by the way, sounds awesome. Yeah. I would totally watch that. If that's all it was, I would watch that show every week out of just sheer curiosity.
It's almost like the Russell Crowe show on South Park. Fighting around the world.
I have no idea what that is.
Basically, Russell Crowe just goes around beating up people.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. It's his whole thing. Cool. Yeah, he just picks fights with people.
That's it. Yeah. Just like Reverend Anderson.
Awesome. So, all right. So let's finally, because that is the end of the Anderson arc in this episode, we get this altercation between him and Kyle outside Sherry's hospital room where their ideological differences become text and it becomes that argument, and then they split for the evening. Presumably to reconvene later to punch some more folks. So let's talk about Allison, because we get so much more Allison this hour than, as I was saying, that I think we've gotten all season.
Combined. Yeah, 100%.
So far. And it's fascinating because I didn't feel like I truly had a sense of who this person was and what her point of view could possibly be up until now. I'm still not entirely sure. I know completely what her point of view is. I feel like there's still some stuff they're withholding from us, some information that we don't have yet. But she definitely seems like a far more rounded, fleshed out person.
Yeah. And as Childhood's Hour points out in the chat, Allison has to still be possessed. She said she's lost time and feels outside herself. And this is really one of the first times we actually hear someone talking about their experience. Because you can tell, like, Mildred and some of these other people obviously are okay with it. But Allison is not. That's why she's self-medicating, talking about this. So that's what's interesting to me, is the difference in some of the people.
Sorry. And what's really interesting, too, is you get this a lot in between with Kyle and Allison's interactions. Does she have no idea that she was possessed?
I don't think so.
Seems like
which is so weird. I want to like pound Kyle and be like, "Why don't you just try to explain it?" It seemed weird
So here's the thing. So here's how I get it. It's multi-layered. So one, she knows that Kyle probably did not beat her face in. We get that when she's on the porch and she's like, "You would have at least tried to apologize." So something's weird going on. Why won't you tell me? And Kyle's like, "I'm not going to tell you." And I really think he's doing it because she couldn't handle having beat her child the way that she did.
Yeah.
Like, it was such kind of like a violent thing, and he's trying to save her from that knowledge. Okay. And so I'm with you, though. I still feel like maybe if you tried, I'm sure you've talked about your mother with her before, like, you could try to approach this, but just letting her go, not giving her any kinds of answers, like, it's going to push her deeper down whatever rabbit hole she's falling down. I feel bad for her. She needs help.
Yeah. For sure. And it seems, too, like she's definitely, whether or not she's supposed to be taking these different prescription medications that we see her taking, she is taking them. And I do think, for me, what calls into question, when she describes the state that she's in, what makes me question whether or not she's actually still possessed, is she could very easily be talking about the lingering effects of having a demonic presence inside you, but also a lot of that, this feeling outside of yourself, this spacing on time, a lot of these could very easily be side effects of abusing these prescription medications.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or just the depression she has that she's treating with this, you know, and that's the thing, and that's why it's such a good parallel, because we're assuming that it is demonic possession, but it may not be. It may just be her life sucks.
That's what I was going to say. Of all the people, I was confused because at the beginning of the episode and when they're showing her at first, I 100% was like, she has to be possessed because she would have these weird little moments and like the looks in her eyes.
All spacey.
I did get stressed for a moment when she had that thing to get the wallpaper off and Megan was there. I thought like she was going to
stab that kid.
Yeah, I thought something bad was going to happen. But then, by the end of it, when you realize all the issues she has and the medicine and him touching her and it being fine, I was very confused because that first interaction where he touched her, she had kind of like freaked out. So it led me to believe that the touch was having an effect.
Right.
And so I was expecting this huge thing when they kissed at the end. And then when he didn't, I was like, maybe she's not.
Yeah.
Maybe she just has issues.
Oh, no.
Right, and that's the thing, though. It's exactly that. Of course, they want us now to go, oh, maybe she's fine.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's still equally probable that they're just going to pull that rug out.
Well, so we go back to a quote Anderson said earlier. The devil's a trickster. He makes you think he's up and gone, but he's hiding
something
dormant in there. Yeah, so, I mean, maybe that part of her is just dormant, waiting for the right time to strike.
Yeah, because to me, the way that she acts with Kyle and the daughter just make it seem like this can't be the person that he married and had a child with. Because you just see, she's pretty dark.
You get the parallel of the closet where his daughter runs in and closes the door. I was like, oh, it's happening again! It's creepy.
Yeah. Well, but I did want to touch on the relationship between Allison and Amber, because you watch, and she admits as much to Megan that she doesn't really know what she's doing. She's not... Whether she ever was or not is a matter for debate, I suppose, but by her own admission, in this moment, she is not equipped to be a proper mother to her daughter. And we see, even though it doesn't get highlighted that specifically outside of, like you mentioned, the scene where Amber's got the paint all over the wall and she made the mess and Allison grabs her aggressively and she runs into the closet. Mm. It doesn't get specifically highlighted in a very big or very aggressive way. We get stuff like at the top of this episode, she's playing with her toys and she's very clearly reenacting
what happened
between her parents. And what she says, and I had to write this down too, if you drink the black poison, you'll get sick and you won't love us anymore.
Mm.
And I immediately, I'm just like, oh, this poor kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
So much.
Well, another thing I'm confused at too is clearly Amber does not really like her mom, but...
No, I believe...
She called her...
We can say that, right?
Yeah, it's
she called me a mean bitch.
Bitch, I'm like, whoa. Mm-hmm. But I'm confused because, so we know that it was Allison who beat up Amber and not Kyle. So has Amber not expressed that to her mom? Like, you hurt me? Or what's the deal with that? Because clearly Amber's very open about wanting to be with her dad, and she knows that it was her mom. She has to know that it was her mom who hurt her. So that's where I was kind of thrown off. How does Allison have no idea that she did this?
Yeah, I think the thing is they didn't really investigate being that how Allison looked. So that's probably what happened. And Kyle is just the type of person who's willing to take that to his grave just so he doesn't hurt Amber or Allison. And I think that's the sad part, though, is like Kyle was trying to save her and they don't, you know, nobody else knows that other than Reverend Anderson. Yeah. And that's the thing with Amber knowing all of what's going on. I don't know why no one's ever questioned it because she interacted with her dolls like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like on these shows, nobody's ever paying attention to the children. Yeah, and I feel like
exactly.
they did this on season one of True Detective as well, where the little girl was setting up a tableau with her toys. And I'm like, guys, to solve the mystery, you just look at the little children's dolls.
Yep. In Orphan Black, the main chick's daughter is like building the magic island from far away. And I'm like, that's the map. That's the map. You need to pay attention. Look. And they're like, you just go on and play, little girl. And I'm like, why, guys?
Yeah.
They know. The children always know.
It's always, if there's a little child in one of these stories, you always watch them while they play with their dolls because they're doing some weird, creepy stuff they happen to see. So
they are.
Kyle obviously wants to bridge this gap between him and Allison, if only to verify for sure that she is safe, that his daughter is safe.
Sure.
Plan A, not the best plan. He and Anderson creepily park outside of her house and just hang out there. Did they think that if anything was wrong, she'd be breaking windows and like running outside?
I just think he wanted to be close so that you see, like, the house wasn't burning down.
Right.
And then he kind of got there and was like, I don't have a next step. Can't go in. Can't knock on the door.
In regards to Kyle and Allison, too, another thing that I really like this episode is that you do see, and Reverend makes some, I forget the exact phrasing, but you see that Allison really does still love Kyle and is, like you said, we learned so much about Allison this episode. And it was interesting to me to learn that she truly doesn't think, she knows that Kyle's not the kind of guy who would hurt her, so it was nice to see that she was kind of confused, because up until this point I was like, why is she so aggressively pushing him away? But then I realized she has no idea anything that's going on.
She won't go with no memory. He won't explain, but he exactly. won't apologize.
And it's clear she still loves him. Yeah. You can tell.
And we get that flashback of her waking up in the hospital after all that happened. And clearly, not only having no memory, but what I thought was very, very telling is that she very clearly does not believe that Kyle would have hurt them.
Yeah.
So eventually Kyle says, all right, that was a terrible plan. I guess off screen, he probably sat for a while and went, that was dumb. So goes to Megan and asks if Megan can set something up. And Megan, I think, immediately is like, this is not a good idea. Yeah. You should leave this poor woman alone. But goes and talks to Allison herself. And I really liked this scene.
Yeah.
Because we get a lot of textual information about Allison that is spoken, but we also see this relationship the relationship as currently exists between Allison and Megan, and it hints so strongly at what I think at one point, if I'm reading it correctly, was a really genuine, good, strong friendship between the two of them. And so you see Allison open up a little bit, but it's mostly only to tell Megan how little she knows, how little she understands. And I again, had to take her specific words down because she says, I feel like everything that held me down is gone and I'm just floating away. It scares me so much. There are memories. There are days that I just can't access. And I don't know if I lost something or if something's getting in the way, blocking the truth. Specifically the part about how she feels like what held her down is gone and she's floating away. I don't know about you guys, made me think immediately about how when the demons leave people's bodies, they seem to take everything with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was interesting. That was a very interesting touch that I thought. So Megan's not going to set anything up. So Kyle eventually takes it upon himself to go see Allison himself. That doesn't go particularly well because Amber runs out, says, I want to live with Daddy, calls her a mean bitch. And obviously Allison's not particularly happy about that.
Yeah.
Not particularly pleased. So we get the flashback and then we get the scene of Amber with the can of red paint. Painting all over, it goes obviously very badly, as we've already discussed. And then the next time we see Allison is when Kyle arrives back home and she's already there waiting for him. Mm. And she's left Amber with a neighbor and she needs some clarity. Mm. I suppose she needs to know what's going on. And she asks Kyle. And of course, as we've talked about, Kyle elects for a number of reasons not to tell her. They have the kiss moment and she leaves him alone on his porch. Mm. And poor Kyle. poor Kyle.
Mess.
Yeah.
Everything in his life is just completely a wreck. And then to know that she still cares for you, like, I think it was easier when he was like, oh, good, she hates me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And my biggest concern is just that my daughter's safe and that they're happy and together. But to now know that she's questioning and that whole just defeat of not being able to tell her, he looked more broken than we've ever seen him, which is saying so much for Kyle.
Yeah.
Well, and like you say, I think it probably would be so much easier for him, or certainly simpler, if it was as clear cut as, okay, Allison hates me, she will always hate me, but I'm just going to make sure that they're safe. By Allison's own admittance, she says, her exact words are, if I could erase 10 minutes from our lives, 10 minutes, it would all be perfect. That's heartbreaking.
It really was. I was like, oh man. It was, bad.
Which
was hard.
Which, of course, then puts him in an even more compromised emotional state.
Yes.
Which is great for drama, bad for Kyle. Very bad for Kyle.
Is there anything good for Kyle?
No. So far, no.
Nope.
No.
No, although he got to hug his daughter.
That was nice.
Their relationship, I mean, it's messed up, but that's probably nice for him to know that his daughter loves him so much. You can tell she gets so excited when she saw him, and I thought that was so sweet. So that is one good thing, Kyle.
Yeah, there is one bright spot.
But then he gets ripped away and can't see her. But, I mean, he knows that she loves him.
And now, apparently it's Sydney's job to take care of him and Reverend Anderson.
Yeah.
Which does not bode well. Does not, that whole conversation between Sydney and Mildred, just horrifying.
So let's...
Oh, yeah,
let's,
it was awesome.
Let's hit that thread since we've covered the big relationship stuff for this hour. Let's hit the last few threads, beginning with Sydney. Brent Spiner is so creepy.
So creepy.
Yes.
So when Kyle's out, he just wanders into Kyle's house and is just wandering around?
Yes. And also, I totally think Kyle's going to notice that picture, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Because he kind of purposely purposely kind of left it like that.
Yeah.
And it also gave me a weird vibe. So first he walks into the house like he owns it, and then he's fixing things in the house, which to me struck me as very fatherly, and we don't know who Kyle's father is, and I'm like, what is the situation here with you? And then he just lays on the bed and kicks his heels up, and he's like,
very at home.
He's very comfortable in this space, and I don't know, like, were you the demon that was possessing his mother, or... are you somehow the reason he's here? Like, what? I'm really interested to find out their connection.
Yeah.
Although you mentioned that he does walk in like he owns the place and starts, you know, messing around with stuff. He does do the same thing at Mildred's. He just walks right in and immediately just starts picking up her little stuff, rings the bell, which I thought was a really nice moment. But so, yeah, he has this conversation with Mildred, and you get a greater sense of... I'm going to use the name Mildred because it does seem like...
Yeah.
Did the entity pick the name Mildred, or is it just pleased that its host's name is Mildred?
Like, because they even have that whole conversation about, oh, you don't hear that name much anymore, and then she asks him for his name. He's like, why does it matter? She's like, it's customary.
Right.
Yeah.
So I don't know if we're getting, like, the kind of communal structure of wherever these beasties come from, or if this is just kind of like an old-fashioned prayer. Have you been deep-seated in Mildred for a long time? Because he says you took your bet like we all did, and she says she's not going to survive the merger, which gave me the feeling of, like, have you been with this woman for a long time, and now the body's giving out, and you're effed? Or...
well, and Sydney's response when she says that she's afraid she's not going to survive the merger is, yeah, you took your chances the way the rest of us did. Yeah. Sometimes you draw the short straw. I don't know what that means.
Yeah. For all the information we got this episode, there is, like, even more now that we don't know, though.
So many
it's
questions.
So
more
weird.
Questions.
Yeah, it's like, you get so much, but then it's like, but now I don't know any of this anymore. It's crazy.
But I do like that we get more shades of personality from Mildred. And I like that she talks about her possessions or physical possessions. Some of them she had before she arrived, is the way she puts it. Some after. And I love the notion of the demon arriving as if they've just moved into a new place, you know what I mean? Which is great. But then the real big weird moment in the scene was when Mildred grabs Sydney and just plants a big old kiss on him.
That was so funny.
Is that what you're calling it?
Yeah.
We're calling it a kiss?
It looks like a kiss. Well, right.
I was like, I don't know. Yeah. She just straight up... like, I was like, oh my gosh, Mildred!
So I was going to ask, how did you guys... because obviously whatever she was trying to do was unsuccessful, but how did you guys read that? What did you read that as her trying to do?
Like the stealing of life force. Yeah. Like she's like, you can't blame me, I'm not going to start the merger. I felt like she was like, oh, this black glue is clearly a thing that can help sustain you or break you. And it seemed like she was just trying to get whatever was keeping him up for herself.
Yeah, that's how I saw, especially with that merger comment, is like, she's just trying to survive.
Yeah.
You know? So she's like, what can I do here?
And she clearly, even though she didn't recognize Sydney's human form at first, very quickly, immediately knows exactly who he is. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's just, well, this guy's got more of that black goo than I do. I'm going to take his black goo.
I'm going to take my chances.
It obviously doesn't work. And so, again, much like all of the Sydney business so far this season, interesting, creepy, and just cryptic enough that while I feel like I learned something, I could not for the life of me explain to you what I learned.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, I feel like they're giving me something here, but I'm not going to figure out what they're giving me until later episodes.
To follow that thread, before we have to close out here, we got to talk about the chiefs, the fire chief
and
the
police
chief. And there's definitely a lot of, like, pseudo-answered questions to very much, like, what are you doing?
I know.
I have no idea what the fire chief is up to. I don't know the police chief. Like, we're kind of suspicious of the police chief for a while. We're like, what's your aim? It kind of seems like you're hiding stuff. And now he's like, you know, you got to find out if that girl's alive. We have to investigate deeper. And then that whole conversation when dude's in, like, that pit, chainsawing trees.
Chainsawing the trees. No.
And police is like, I'm just gonna pop my gun. I was like,
I was nervous during that exchange.
I really thought they were gonna come to blows, which would have been cool because I like old man fights.
They're awesome.
But so it's that conversation, right, where Chief tells Mark to follow up on the DNA because the DNA from the fingernail came back, and it's this 26-year-old girl who's in their system because she stole a 12-pound ham from the Piggly Wiggly.
Mm-hmm. My personal hero.
and the boyfriend is reported her missing. Chief says, okay, follow up and see if she's not just hiding from the boyfriend, which is what ultimately turns out to be the case.
Yeah.
But Chief's suspicion, on paper, turns out to be the case. But Chief's suspicion seems to be, and he says, we may find her near that campsite. Mark says we may find her near that campsite. I don't think Chief forgets about that, and I think he's confronting Ogden specifically about did you kill this girl? Did you have something to do with killing this girl?
I mean, you clearly had to blow up the site.
They had that scene earlier where it seems like Ogden is very much like, nope, that's it's done. I don't want to worry about it. I don't want to talk about it. Where's your watch, Ogden? Oh, it's getting fixed. Not sinister. Also, both scenes between Chief and Ogden end with a really long close up on Ogden watching Chief leave.
Yeah.
That seems very much like they so want us to be suspicious of this person.
Oh, yeah.
That I'm wondering how big a threat this person actually is.
And yeah. See, and that was my first thought, too, because when we first cut to Chief, it's right after we see Sydney laying on the bed, and we cut to Chief laying in that exact same position, but with his heels up on his mm-hmm. desk, and I'm like, what are you telling me? And then we've even got a similar shot between when Sydney's like shaving right before he kills the next door neighbor with Allison when she's brushing her hair. That same shot in the mirror, and it's just very slow and like I'm not here and I don't really care, but I'm keeping up appearances. And I'm like, we're seeing a lot of parallels between characters that don't seem like they should match up. Yeah. And I just, as you said at the top, who can we trust?
I know.
I can't trust anyone.
Trust no one.
For me, and this isn't even really a criticism because I thought the scene was so tense and compelling, but the scene between the Chief and Ogden, and we've seen Ogden a couple of times now, and we know they know each other socially, but the part where Chief is like, we're best friends, I was like, you are?
I know. That's weird. Too.
It's like, okay.
They have old man friendship. Yeah. They don't need to express love for each other. They're like, you've known me a long time. We're best friends.
Yeah.
Just because I've known you the longest.
But, and that's the thing. That, I think, speaks to the overall quality of this show. That my reaction was, wait, what? You know what? I'll buy it. Okay, it's fine. It's totally fine. I'm good with it.
Established now.
But so, the other thing that I wanted to ask you guys, and I'm wondering if it's just me, I watch a lot of TV, so I'm always trying to find clues that'll point me towards the reality of what's actually happening. Does it seem like Chief knows, I'm trying to figure out the best way to phrase this, knows a little bit about the type of things Ogden might be involved in?
Oh, yeah.
Because they share a history of being involved in some questionable stuff.
Yeah. But yeah, he makes a comment of, like, we've done and seen a lot of crazy things. And I was like what? Mm. Like, what did you guys got them? Because you get the sense that they've both been in their professions forever. Mm-hmm. Like, probably their first and last jobs kinds of situations. And so you wonder, you know, have you guys covered up things together? Or is this something you guys both used to do, and what do you got out, and now you're questioning each other? It's very seedy.
Yeah, and to me, it's just like, does it connect with the demonic possessions? Because everything's always an umbrella. That's what I wonder, is like, what did they do that possibly caused this, or, you know, has to do with it? Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, and I think that's something that merits some speculation, and since we've already covered a ton of information, I would like to start speculating wildly, unless there's something else you guys specifically want to hit on. Then let's move into predictions.
Yeah!
And now, you're after Buzz TV.
I'll go.
Yes?
I'll start. So, one thing that was not, I can't even remember if it was the episode before this, but something with Mark and what is the boyfriend who can exploit the guy who
Donnie.
Came back, Donnie. Mm. Something with that is gotta blow up.
That like, was there's no way
it was missing from this
conspicuously
episode.
Absent considering how much time we spent with
exactly.
it.
Exactly. So I think that there's gonna be a big blow up there because there's no way that Mark's getting away with that. And I'm very curious. I think Donnie's gonna come back and do some shady shiz. Mm-hmm. But I don't think he has anything to do with the demons. I think it's just a separate thing that's gonna come back. And I also just have a feeling someone is going to die soon. I think it might be the Chief.
It feels like it's been a minute.
Yeah. I feel like it's going to be the Chief. That's all I got.
Okay. All right. Sonny's about to make a play. It's clear that he doesn't want other demons stepping in on his territory. This is his job. He's taking it very seriously. Doing something to lay his ducks in a row. I know we can't see the full picture yet, but I'm excited to see him attack and what that attack looks like. Mm-hmm. I also think that we're going to see the downfall of Allison. It seems like she's just precariously hanging on, and I don't know if seeing Kyle helped her at all. It doesn't seem like it did a lot of overall good for her, as is one with Kyle and his females. I'm worried, but I think Allison's going down and Sunny's making a move next
week. That concerns me because how much further could she fall?
I know.
She's got a lot
poor
of
girl.
Room
yeah.
to fall.
That's like that. That I hear Mitch Hedberg in my head going, why is the floor as low as I can go?
That's every character in this show, right? Yeah. I mean, because, yeah, as I spoiled earlier, if you saw in the previews, it looks like Reverend Anderson takes a dark path in this next episode. And a lot of it is, like, realizing that what you've given up your life for didn't actually do any good. It's just got to be so heartbreaking. And I'm sure he and Kyle will come to blows, like, whether metaphorically or just, you know, actually come to blows. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. Yeah.
It is. It's a little bit like you don't the same way the demons, when they leave, take everything of the person with them. You hope that Anderson, if he does abandon his faith, doesn't abandon all of himself along with it. And I didn't see this promo, but based on what you're telling me, it seems like this is going to become an immediate concern.
Yeah.
And I agree. It seems very much like Sydney is moving closer and closer and closer, but it also seems like they need Kyle for whatever's coming. So whatever horrible punishment or torture they can concoct for Kyle isn't going to be fatal to him. Which, of course, means the people we need to be immediately fearful for are the ones he cares about the most. And that's Allison, that's Amber, and that's Megan.
Yep.
I am far more terrified, honestly, for Megan than for Amber.
They made us fall in love with Megan too much.
Yes. Yeah.
And because
that relationship is so good, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because she certainly had to deal with the fallout, but so far she is the only one this thing hasn't touched directly.
Hmm.
I am actually more scared for her than for anyone else around him at this point, especially when she doesn't need the demons for her world to be on the verge of imploding. Between Donnie and then whatever this sword of Damocles hanging over Mark, things could get very, very nasty for her very, very quickly.
Agreed.
That's my fear.
I'm with you. I have that fear, too.
And, of course, it'll just all get worse. For everybody, is there anything else that you guys want to touch on really quickly before we wrap? Because we are running low on time.
I think we covered it all.
Quite a bit. Okay, so, until next week, wonderful panel, where can everybody find you online?
Hello, you can find me at _AbbyVega.
I'm Joel Monique. You can find me every week at Black Girl Nerds. Check the site out for my review of Star Trek coming up next week.
And yes, you can always find me at LACRETIALYON anywhere on social media, since there is only one.
There is. That's what you tell me. And I am Lex Michael. I am all over social media at the Lex Michael. Thank you guys again so much for joining us. Please like us, subscribe to us, rate us 5 stars, give us all the best reviews that you possibly can muster so that everybody knows you love us. We love you too. We will see you right here next week to talk about more demons and sadness and all that fun stuff. We'll see you then.
Bye, guys.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.